This is the sound of football.
On this week's Sound of Football, we look back on a weekend of quirky results and unexpected victories in the Premier League for Stoke City and Wigan, amongst others. We assess the title credentials of those bitter rivals Liverpool and Man United, both at home and in Europe. Plus, we cast a casual glance in the direction of the FA Cup first round draw and consider having a whip round for Charlton Athletic. All that and a whole lot more in this week's Sound of Football. And it's a very warm welcome to show number 12 of The Sound of Football. Chris Oakley here, and as ever, it's my undoubted pleasure to welcome aboard Terry DeFellin and Graham Sibley from Some People on the Pitch and The Onion Bag. Welcome, hello, chaps.
Hello.
Another week and plenty to get through, as ever. But all the World Cup stuff we can put to one side from the last couple of shows, so we can get straight on with the Premier League, back to domestic matters once again. And I don't know about you two, but I do one of these kind of prediction league thingies, a bit like a sort of aside from the Premier League, and I just found that the results this weekend seemed a bit difficult to predict, and there were so many kind of results that perhaps you wouldn't have expected. For instance, Liverpool beating Man U, which is kind of debatable, but I think probably many people would have thought on current form that Man U would have won that one, but Liverpool won 2-0. I think Stoke won at Spurs for the first time in about 30-odd years, and dare I say it, West Ham even pulling back to get a draw against Arsenal. Don't hit me, Graham. Various others as well. Burnley, who I think have won all their games at home up until now, lost to Wigan, and so on and so on and so forth. Any particular results there that you, fellas, that particularly caught your eye and you thought were of special interest? He says sort of trying to avoid starting off with Liverpool against Man U, but if you want to, feel free.
I think the only predictable, the only score that came out that didn't raise any eyebrows was Chelsea beating Blackburn, wasn't it, really? Blackburn in a terrible run of away games at the moment. I think that's their ninth straight defeat away from home. But that said, I think that they've gone to Chelsea twice and Arsenal twice in that because it goes over the end of last season, the beginning of this. So not very easy ties. But I think Chelsea do have the sign over Blackburn as well. I don't think they've managed to score against them since before the last World Cup. So yeah. It's all a bit grim for Blackburn against Chelsea. But and the 5-0. Scoreline at the end of it. I watched some of the game and I gave up on it after when it got to 2-0 and switched over for the game on the other side, the quite exciting Derby QPR game on BBC2.
I caught a bit of that. It took at half time, it was still only 1-0 to Chelsea, wasn't it? So they took a while to break down Blackburn, but once they got that first chip in there, then that was the whole lot crumbled, didn't it, soon after?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was pretty much like that. I mean, it was really a question of when it was going to start to happen rather than if it was going to start to happen, I felt. But you're right, the rest of the weekend was full of turn-ups. I don't know, how much did you see, Terry?
Well, a fair amount of it. I think that you wouldn't think that Burnley losing at home, a newly promoted club, losing at home would be such a turn-up. But given their exploits at home so far this season, that is a surprising result.
Wigan certainly have sort of turned the corner a bit. Like, they had a very shaky start, didn't they?
Most definitely.
They've been putting in some good performances quite recently, so I mean, not an entirely surprising result there.
No. I mean, I saw the Villa, the Wolves Villa game, and obviously, on the balance of the play, the result wasn't a terribly big surprise at all, because.
No.
But this was by virtue of the fact that Villa just really didn't seem to play with any kind of. But it's very difficult to apply any kind of description to how Villa played at all. They just simply, it's like they weren't there. And it was a very, very, very odd game to watch, and not terribly engaging, it's got to be said. So although Wolves, I suppose, could be pleased with getting a point in a derby game, against a very good, on paper, and indeed on the basis of recent performances, extremely good Villa side, but one that just for some reason just didn't choose to turn up. And for a Midlands derby, you know, as you said in your preview, Graham, that, you know, it's time for the funny noses and the clown shoes for Midlands derbies, because that's what they tend to be like. They can be quite comedic and error-strewn. It was a really humdrum affair and not terribly interesting at all, unfortunately.
I thought they were two very evenly matched sides, actually. Wolves certainly gave Villa something to think about there, but I think even our good friend Chris Nee from the Two Footed Tackle podcast was suspecting that could have been that certainly was no formality for Aston Villa to win. And as you say, they kind of laboured a little bit against Wolves, and I think certainly Mick McCarthy would have been the happier of the two coaches from that one.
Definitely, yeah, most definitely. I think we'll probably move on to the couple of big ones on Sunday. But got to doff your hat to Stoke for that win at Spurs. I mean, I realise the clocks have gone back, which means Spurs are now going to be rubbish. But you know, I think it's more than just good timing. You know, that's a fantastic result.
Didn't Spurs have to have played the last 20 minutes with 10 men or something?
10 men.
Yeah, is that right? I must confess, I'm looking at the result and I thought, oh, that's good, but I saw nothing of it because I missed Match of the Day, so I didn't get to see anything from it. So perhaps you guys could fill me in as to, you know, some of the more details of it.
Well, it was basically the case that Tottenham had made all three substitutions at the time of the injury to Aaron Lennon, that's right. So they were kind of stuffed a little bit, sort of near the end there. But Stoke played in some respects like they were the home team. I think Tottenham were just having one of those kind of off days in many ways. Although they had the chances, I think certainly Crouch came close during the course of the game from what I saw and so on. But Stoke are playing like a team that are determined to stay in the Premier League, which is... it's quite gratifying to see from the neutral point of view, given how long it's been since they were last in the top flight. So, congratulations to them. I could be bitter given the fact that they're kind of in the position where my team West Ham ought to be, really. But you know, they're playing good stuff, and all credit to them, really.
Yeah, well, I don't think you really have to worry about West Ham after their second half showing on Sunday, really. Because they look like a team that is gonna do well at some point this season, and as I said in my preview on Friday, I said West Ham haven't been embarrassed this season.
Go on.
Sorry, and it's just a case of like you know it seemed that I hadn't actually seen them this season. I thought, well, where is it all going wrong for them? And in the first half, you could see this team looked like a broken team, and Arsenal, without even trying, was suddenly found themselves 2-0 up, and they came out second half Arsenal with the pipe and slippers and. And obviously, like West Ham, they made a couple of changes, and they were bang up for it. And unlucky in the end, I thought. But conversely, as well, Arsenal could have easily nicked it at the end with Green's fantastic save from Van Persie's header. So, yes. Yeah.
I mean, from what I saw of it, even before the game started, I just thought there's no way West Ham are going to win this one on current form. It was just the most unlikely result. And again, from what I saw, just West Ham just didn't turn up in the first half, and Arsenal were. I think I heard a quote from somebody saying that they could have been sort of 5 or 6 up even at half time. And I don't know. I think what happened was that Gianfranco Zola sort of decided he had to do what he had to do, which is to end up with a three-man attack.
Yeah.
And it doesn't always, in fact, it very rarely works in my experience, no matter which team tries that on, but it somehow carved open a few chances. And I think the penalty, Colton, was it Colton Cole, I think, wasn't it, who was fouled in the area?
Yeah.
Was very, very, I mean, I say this as a West Ham fan, it doesn't take a lot for Colton Cole to...
No, I mean, it was, I think what it was the referee, two wrongs trying to make a right, because about 3 minutes earlier, West Ham had a very decent shout for a penalty when I think it was Paul Parker was running into the penalty area, and Gallus just basically flayed out a leg in front of him. So, you know, when Song just basically, you know, just went, just stood his ground really in front of Cole, and Cole fell over him. I think it gave the referee a very easy sort of like sort of opportunity to make up for perhaps what could have been seen as an early mistake. I mean, I thought both of them would have been a bit soft actually, because I thought Parker was going down to begin with anyway. But I mean, I've seen worse given than the Gallus one. You know, with the first goal, I mean, that was quite honestly goalkeeper error. Like, you know, he managed to parry the ball straight back into the 6 yard box where someone just tapped it in. So I'm not really as an Arsenal fan, got no complaints about the manner in which West Ham equalised. It was just more complaints about the seeming laziness of Arsenal, especially in midfield. They looked like, you know, they were just knocking it around. I mean, it was when in the first half you saw Arshavin and Fabregas were being creative, and they were slicing West Ham apart. In the second half they were just literally walking around expecting, you know, to score 4, 5, 6, and it didn't happen. So I it was disappointing really, because after the European game midweek, you would have thought, now, have you learnt your lesson here? And obviously, no, they hadn't learnt it at all. So hopefully with Tottenham coming up at the weekend, then
they're a bit more fired up for that and a bit more focused, do you think?
You would certainly hope so. And I would hope that the fans wouldn't allow them to show any of the sort of lackadaisical attitude that they showed in the previous two games.
Yeah, I'll be tactful and say that I think West Ham were a little fortunate to get a point out of that, but they did battle in the second half, and fair enough, I suppose. As a West Ham fan, I hope that's a sign of better things to come and not before time. I think there was a quote on the Guardian Football Weekly podcast last week when West Ham were about to play Stoke. And it was very apt, I thought. Somebody said, Stoke are very good at playing bad football, and West Ham are very bad at playing good football, and taking the latter. I think that's absolutely spot on at the moment. And to a degree, I think with West Ham, it is just confidence, and hopefully that, let's say, that point will improve things. But I can confirm that was, going back to Stoke against Tottenham, that was Stoke's first win at White Hart Lane since 1975. So quite an achievement there. And even Birmingham managed to beat an informed Sunderland team. So they did all right by all accounts. The way the table is looking at the moment, it's Chelsea leading by 2 points at the top, ahead of Man United, who slipped up, as we know. Arsenal third, level on points with Tottenham, as we mentioned. Liverpool up to fifth. Man City struggled. Are we now sort of revising our... Well, I mean, I suppose we were all sort of thinking that Man City as being not ready to break into the top four yet, but there's been various mutterings I've heard at the weekend of people sort of saying, well, you know, I think with that result for Man City 2-2 at home to Fulham, that proves that they haven't got the kind of the killer instinct, if you like, to sort of snuff out the with all due respect to Fulham, the more mediocre teams. Something you both subscribe to, would you say?
I think that Manchester City are a decent bet for a top four finish if somebody still messes up. But I think it's gonna be someone's gonna have to mess up in order for them to get in. I think that kind of result has more bearing on their ability or lack of ability, I think, to take the championship. I think that there were some people who perhaps felt that, given the start that they'd had, that maybe they would go on and, you know, be able to win the title this season, which I think was always reaching a little bit. I don't think anything significant has changed in that. You know, I think that the top four are still looking good to remain the top four, and City, you know, knocking on the door in the event that anybody, for whatever reason, messes things up. Against Fulham, you know, frankly, a team of their calibre should be able to knock over a team like Fulham, even though Fulham are a very spirited side, very well organised, very together, good team. You'd think that would that would have resulted in City coming through there. But even looking at the table, I mean, there's City are sixth on 18 through to Arsenal third, 19. You know, some United are 3 points ahead there. It isn't, I mean, there's games in hand and whatnot, but it isn't, you know, it's still pretty open. And I think that if what we've seen from today's, this weekend's results, apart from Chelsea, who do look like a team that could be romping off into the distance, that it's going to be quite, that I think that that lot of the, you know, teams are going to take points off each other this season, and that the at least three of the top four will not be quite as imperious as they once were. Having said that, I still think that, I still think it's going to take a fairly, you know, monumental task to overhaul them.
Quite so, yes. Yeah. So just perhaps a bit of an off day, possibly for Man City. Then just against Fulham, there we can allow them that perhaps once or twice.
Yeah, I guess so. Or I mean, you know, this. I mean, the City supporters will probably tell you that it was a very typically City result, and I guess to an extent that no amount of signings can radically alter the character of a football club. I mean, they're never going to be, in my opinion, this ruthless, unrelenting, you know, machine that's just going to steamroller everything. Even if they, you know, there'll always be an element of knockabout fun about Manchester City, and I don't, you know, that's why I think it'll take them some time to win the title, because they'll always contrive to produce results like that. The other result that struck me was the Bolton's win against Everton. I thought that was a fantastic result. I saw the goals for that one. Absolutely brilliant result for Bolton, who do seem to be better than certainly I gave them credit for, and I think perhaps quite a few other people gave them credit for as well.
I felt sort of early on when Bolton were languishing, there were a few people, I think, like, you know, on Match of the Day, they were sort of saying, likes of Alan Hansen and someone saying, well, you know, there you are, Bolton near the bottom, and what else do you expect? And I was thinking, no, this is that's. You know, they're playing better than that, and they just weren't. I just don't think they were getting the results, if that makes any sense. I must admit, I personally felt that there was a lot of potential there for Bolton, and they just needed to just sharpen up their act a bit. And now we find them up near middle of the table and getting results like the one they got against Everton. And I think that's much more like the sort of potential that they were showing earlier on in the season. So a fantastic result actually against Everton, and it keeps sort of Everton down in the bottom half of the table for the time being. But I guess there's no denying the fact that the big game at the weekend, of course, was Liverpool at home to Manchester United, which Liverpool won 2-0, much to some people's surprise. Don't know what you saw of it, chaps, at the time, but it was a fair battle. I would say an element of slight sort of subduedness for much of it, but of course, and it all kicked off at the end in no uncertain terms with, you know, tackles flying in and whatnot. But you'd have to say a pretty formidable win for Liverpool, and all the more ironic, I guess, in that I think last time Liverpool beat Man U, they didn't have Steven Gerrard that day either, and they didn't have him yesterday. But a good all round performance.
Yeah, I thought so. I thought Ben Ayoun had another great performance for Liverpool. I think with his through ball for Torres' goal was fantastic. And yeah, it was a hard fought game. I think most of it. The Man United again really failing to impress at all, especially in midfield.
Yes,
absolutely.
A bit suspect there, weren't they?
I have to echo Graham there with on Ben Ayoun. I mean, what a player he is, and a absolutely perfect pass there. And although there were question marks about Manchester United's defence and defenders, I don't actually think Rio could have done much with that, because it was the perfect port ball and a perfectly timed run. You know, by the time anybody knew anything about it, it was, you know, Torres had gone. The only criticism I think you could have was perhaps that Rio no longer has the pace that he did. Perhaps Rio of old would have had the pace to have kept up with Torres. But
it is worrying, because, you know, when you see that, you say, well, he's going to be getting that in every game from the second round onwards in the World Cup. Mm. So
I'm afraid you're right. Yeah, I mean, and it is what probably. I mean, the risk of distracting. Let's not dwell on it. But it is probably one of the good reasons why England won't win the World Cup next year.
Yeah.
Because our defenders, you know, aren't able to deal with those kind of attackers. But to get back to that, I mean, it was a beautifully weighted pass, beautifully precise, and a perfect run, absolutely superbly timed run. So, yeah. I mean, Speedy Gonzalez would have had trouble catching up with that.
I think you're right, Terry. I mean, like Rio's only other option was to bring him down, be sent.
Yeah,
off
absolutely. Which was give away a penalty. That's the Des Walker. That's the Des Walker approach, isn't it? That was the day when we all knew that Des Walker was finished, wasn't it? When Marco Mar just sort of breezed past him, and Des Walker went, "Hey," just grabbed him by the shirt and pulled him down, and should have been sent off. And another, and we all sort of like thought, "Uh oh."
I think the referee just like felt pity for him. I think.
Yeah. So look, right. I'm not gonna. Yeah, your career's over, so I'm not gonna make it worse by sending you off.
That's not rough.
Indeed. So it's a sobering moment for England fans, obviously, to see that, but also for United fans, because I mean Vidic. I mean usually a fairly composed defender, but Martin Keown said something to that effect yesterday in Match of the Day too, that they've obviously Torres is in his head, and I just think generally speaking that Liverpool are sort of dancing in Vidic's brain, and he was hopeless again for you know, in that crucial period when Liverpool put it all together and put the win together in the last 15-20 minutes or so of the game, and he was all over the show, wasn't he?
Yeah. Is there some kind of blind spot he has when he plays Liverpool? I'm not quite sure what that's all about, but
what I think was most worrying for United fans was the fact that even after the goal winning, you didn't see any sort of specific step up in their performance. You didn't see, right, okay, this is where they're going to like throw it all forward or really like really knuckle down and get onto it again. I think it was interesting. I think in today's fiver, it put the Man United's away record against the other big four teams. And it's looking pretty ropey, actually. I think they've won just two out of the last 13 games they played away from Old Trafford against their major rivals. Mm. And it sort of lends more feeling to the fact that, like, you know, they really have been there for the taking, and they seem to have won like especially last season's title. I think really more because no one else was capable of like, you know, of maintaining it against the lower clubs as much as they were.
Yeah, and Chelsea had a rotten start to last season, didn't? Well, they had a decent start, and then they had that kind of rotten period while they were sorting out all their Scolari shenanigans. And perhaps had that not happened, then Chelsea would have run United closer. They didn't look like a team that. All right, I mean, in fairness, I don't think either team looks like a championship winning side. It's important not to gloss over the fact that the first 60 odd minutes of the game were pretty unengaging.
Yeah,
I had a lot of trouble focusing on the game, to be honest with you. And it wasn't the most exciting or even terribly intriguing game, frankly. But it did just suddenly spring to life and finished splendidly. And in fact, I guess it's always that which will be remembered for it. But neither side, I mean, both sides in relatively average form. Obviously, Liverpool, well, you know, people are using the word crisis, aren't they? And talking about Benitez's job and stuff like that. So two teams that, while have fantastic players and obviously are big, big clubs, two teams in not terribly good shape meeting each other and, you know, the home side winning. So perhaps on the surface, not a terribly earth-shattering result. I don't think it's going to stop Chelsea from just not necessarily walking away with it, but I think they're certainly, you know, looking good so far.
Extremely well placed at the moment, I think it's,
absolutely, I agree with that.
I think the only time that where Chelsea may get unstuck is around African Nations time.
Well, it's coming up in the new year.
Let's see how they cope around that time. Then it might level out a bit. I mean, I think that could mean that we enter enter sort of February, March time with actually three, maybe even four teams actually still in with a realistic chance of taking the title away.
Yeah, no, I mean, you weren't around for our earlier discussion, but we were. I was sort of positing the theory that perhaps City, you know, will be poised to jump into the top four, you know, if somebody slips up. But apart from that, we are kind of looking at that kind of four-way battle, I think. With, I don't know. I mean, what do you think, Greg? Do you think Arsenal, I mean, do they, given their kind of strange performance against West Ham, do you think that they've got kind of genuine title credentials, or you've got to wonder about the hunger of a team like that? I mean, no disrespect.
Yeah, I don't think they have purely because of the squad depth still.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they've got class to be anyone on their day. I don't see them taking many points against their main rivals this season, and I think that's going to be the key for Arsenal, because they're still going to drop points like they did against West Ham.
So
it's vital for them to take. They can't do what Man United did last season and just basically beat everyone at home, which is what Man United did. They just took so many points there that it was just like a sort of like huge block that made it impossible for other people to overhaul them.
I'm quite impressed though by the quality of play of people like sort of Van Persie and so on.
Van Persie looks in the form of his life for Arsenal, but
yeah, and you've got Nasri as well, sort of coming back.
Yeah,
in the world,
but really, so. We all know that the Van Persie's made of glass, and you know you're not going to get 38 games out of him for a season. If you are depending on him, then you're not. Then you've got to really start worrying. This is some of his. But he's in the form of his life at the moment. But
the other argument, of course, is the argument about the Italian clubs and the Spanish clubs, which notoriously are well known for conditioning themselves so that they're peaking in March for the second stage of the Champions League. And maybe what we're seeing is sort of. You know, I'm talking generally speaking about the top four now. Is sort of generally that they're there, you know, a little bit off kilter at the moment, and you know, yeah, keeping their powder dry, so to speak, until the new year when they get going. But I mean, it's interesting because you know, an Arsenal side, they've got you know the squad depth issues and fitness, shall we say, fitness issues, sort of longevity issues of some of their best players. You know, Chelsea have got Africa Cup of Nations issues. They're going to lose Essien. They're going to lose Drogba. To name two that they're going to lose for a whole month, and you know, Manchester United, who just seem not really there, a creaking defence and unconvincing midfield, and Berbatov, not a player who's ready to lead the line, and only Rooney there, and Liverpool, well, with Liverpool's sort of multitude of different issues. I mean, all four teams look, you know. They've got flaws about them. They've got weaknesses that perhaps in the past you expect them not to have. So it could be a really fluid and very interesting.
I think it's going to be interesting to see just how well they do in the Champions League this year, because we've got very used to it over the last couple of seasons, seeing all of these clubs make it to the latter stages. So like they've all made it to the quarterfinals, I think, for the last three seasons, I think. It's going to be interesting to see how it goes on from here in that competition.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I don't think it's a done deal.
At the moment, Liverpool look like favourites for the Europa League at the moment.
Liverpool may not. They're absolutely favourites to win the Europa League, rather than assuming they don't finish bottom of their group. And the rest of them just not looking. I mean, United had a good win, didn't they, against CSKA? I mean, it was a dull game, but a decent win. Chelsea obviously are Chelsea, and they look good. But I mean, I'm looking at Sevilla and thinking, blimey! I mean, I'd like to see them, you know, with a favourable run. They look really impressive. And obviously Barcelona still. But yeah. I mean, it's difficult to. I don't think he's going to be quite the same. So I think now for the top four for our Champions League representatives as it has been last year or the season before all that.
Going back to Man United in terms of in a Premier League context, I wouldn't mind betting that if you plotted a graph of how they've been accumulating points so far this season, I wouldn't mind betting it's pretty much on a par with the same as last year. They're in that kind of second place, but picking up points in most games. And I don't know. I just think they're just sort of, it will be up to other teams like sort of Chelsea or whatever to show that they can do better than that. And the old thing about, Manchester United, even when they're playing badly, they still pick up points. Well, that's been fine for them up to now, and it's now up to somebody else to prove that actually that's perhaps not good enough. And whether it's just a question of whether Manuel will get found out this year, perhaps. But certainly the way Chelsea are picking up points this year, they're sort of in position to possibly do that. As I say, it's an interesting angle with the Champions League matches, the European matches this year. So we'll keep an eye on that for sure. Mm. However, moving Premier League matters aside, we had the draw for the first round of the FA Cup not so very long ago. In terms of when we're recording this podcast, which is Monday evening, and for those who don't know, there's a few interesting ties actually in the first round. Norwich. Crisis-ravaged Norwich, shall we say. They are away to the legends that are Poulton Rovers of the Southern League. Go on, stick your neck out on this one, lads. Upset, possibly? I suppose anything's possible the way Norwich are playing at the moment.
Who knows? I mean, I wonder if that one's going to be the telly game, actually.
I wouldn't be surprised if that is. I think that'll be a trick. I'm not. I think it's the first time I've ever heard of Poulton Rovers, but there we are. Good luck to them. They're home to Norwich. There's also a local derby in the form of Stourbridge, also of the Southern League, playing against Walsall in League One. One or two others as well.
Wealdstone are at home to Rotherham, aren't they? Wealdstone, yep. A club that brought us Stuart Pearce and Vinnie Jones.
Sadly, not playing for them on the occasion. Probably for their advantage, probably. But that's right. And I'm just sort of looking through here.
Millwall have got a home tie against.
I was just looking at that. Yes, against Crawley or AFC Wimbledon.
That may, if Wimbledon beat Crawley, that may well be the TV game. I mean, I don't think ITV will resist the temptation to wax about Wimbledon and how great they are.
Yeah. And then you've got,
I think if that one had been at King's Meadow, then I think that would have been a stick-on game. But as it's at the new Den, I think that because normally on these first round ties they do tend to want to go to the little non-league sides.
Go on, say minnows. You want to say minnows?
I don't really want to say minnows because it's the first round. As far as I'm concerned, everyone minnows down.
Yeah. Apart from Leeds, obviously.
Apart from Leeds, yeah, who are away to Oldham.
I had to say I had a good old chuckle about that. Because I'd forgotten that, obviously, I don't know why I'd forgotten. I knew perfectly well what division Leeds did, but I hadn't considered the consequences of that. And then when I was watching the draw, and out came Oldham will beat Leeds. And I thought, Leeds are in League One. They have to play in the first round of the Cup. Shame. And I support Palace. sorry.
And as a sort of that's a palate cleanse, you've then got Northwich Victoria against Charlton, a fixture which would have probably seemed inconceivable.
Yes, indeed. Sorry.
you've got one team in administration, another one. Well, I don't know. But we're in Charlton at the moment. I mean, like, how much money have they got?
Who knows.
Well,
sorry,
that's probably, if we have a whip round for them, we can probably double their income for the year, probably. So some tasty games coming up there, and we'll be, I'm sure, covering the best and the worst of that in future podcasts.
The sound of football is all about the FA Cup.
Yes, certainly.
What? So with all that taken into consideration, I reckon that's a good place to leave it for now. We don't want to outstay our welcome. I think we've just come up with a motto for our podcast there. But thanks very much indeed for listening, everyone, and thanks for all your feedback via the Facebook fan page and Twitter and all other points in between. Don't forget you can subscribe to the podcast via iTunes, you can also go to our blog site as well, soundoffootball.blogspot.com. We are, as ever, back again this time next week. the time being. Thank you very much indeed for listening. We hope you enjoy what you heard, and it's goodbye from myself, from Terry, and from Graham.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.